Support for Politics and Public Policy reporting on SDPB is made possible by SDN Communications, your business broadband provider. Learn more at sdncommunications.com.
Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. We kick off the hour with the Dakota Political Junkies. First with us, John Hunter. He's publisher of the Madison Daily Leader. John, welcome. Thanks for being
here.
Hi,
Lori. Thanks. Yeah.
And also with us, Seth Tupper. He is from the Black Hills. He is sitting in the Black Hills studio for South Dakota Public Broadcasting. He's an enterprise reporter for the Rapid City Journal. Seth, hey, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
All right, let's go ahead and start with the steps of the United States Supreme Court, because South Dakota Attorney General Marty Jackley was there for the South Dakota v. Wayfair case. He argued in front of the Supreme Court yesterday, I believe it was. Seth, give us an idea of the significance of that, not only, you know, from a taxation policy and a funding the state government area, but also political for Jackley.
Well, yeah, and it overlaps for Jackley, of course, because the state has always claimed that it is missing out on millions of dollars from online sellers in other states who sell into South Dakota and then don't collect that sales tax. And with sales tax being the main driver of the state budget, that's a potentially big hole. So Jackley has a double interest in this, in that not only is he attorney general and he has to defend the state's law that it passed in 2016 requiring most online sellers to remit sales tax, but if he wins the governor's race, he stands to benefit from extra revenue that he would have to inject into the state budget from this. So he's got a lot of interest in it, and I think, you know, if you read the national coverage and people that were actually in the Supreme Court yesterday during the arguments, a lot of the indication was that was pessimistic about the state winning this case. I mean, there seemed to be some strong indications of maybe a 5-4 decision against the state, but we'll have to wait and see there. But I think even if Jackley and the state loses this case, the name recognition that he's going to build or from all the free publicity he got on this yesterday and today still has a value to him, and will be pretty beneficial, I think, for him heading into the primary in June to get his name out there to voters.
Yeah. John Hunter, what would you add to that?
Well, it's got to be a busy time for Marty if he's has to prepare and argue before the state Supreme Court kind of in prime time for campaigning, plus other responsibilities of his office. It's there must be some long work days for him. But what struck me really in that was a comment by Justice Kagan, who said something like, shouldn't Congress be doing something about this? Isn't that they could write laws that would be better suited rather than the court kind of overturning this thing? And she's right, but I think that shows that where Congress has gone, that they, because of the bitter partisan politics, that Congress isn't able or willing or can't pass a lot of legislation. So I think a lot of the shift in the balance of power among the three branches of government in Washington has shifted away from Congress, because Congress has kind of given it up willingly, just unable to do things. So presidents issue more executive orders, more decisions are made by courts, federal courts, state courts, and so on, that it's a little imbalanced. And I think what Justice Kagan said is accurate, that Congress should and could do something about this, but hasn't.
Mm. And Marty Jackley responded to that with, Congress has had 26 years to fix this problem. So he maybe agrees with you in that. Seth, you were going to say?
Well, I was just going to say that reminded me, you know, the rich irony of this situation, of course, is that in South Dakota we have a bunch of Republicans who are typically opposed to tax increases, who are fighting tooth and nail to make us all pay more sales taxes when we purchase online. And we also, those same Republicans typically rail against, you know, activist judges making law, and here we are, Republican-dominated South Dakota, asking the Supreme Court to essentially step in and make law here. So there are some ironies here, but again, I don't think that will hurt Jackley because he's in agreement with all the other top Republicans in the state on this issue. So there's really not much room to criticize him for that.
Seth, do you think it's a conversation about business, though, that this is Republicans trying to protect Main Street businesses more than it's about taxation? Or do you think it's really a both?
Yeah, I think, this issue has been going. I did an internship at the state capitol, and I think it was around the year 2000. And I remember sitting in a committee hearing back then, listening to them talk about this problem. And I think 10, 15 years ago, it was more of an argument about protecting, small town brick and mortar businesses. But as more and more and more shopping has gone online, I think that argument kind of falls away now, in that I don't know that you or I or anybody we know is going to avoid buying something on the internet because we have to pay, sales tax. I mean, that's going to impact our decision one way or the other. People shop online for the convenience, and it'd be nice to think that people would support your local community and go against shopping online just because, I want the local community to get my sales tax, but I think that's pretty unrealistic. So I think anymore it's just more of an argument about the state budget more so than it is about, protecting local businesses.
John, what are your thoughts on that? Is Seth on the right track argument has sort of fallen away?
It's a rare thing that I mildly disagree with Seth, but in this case I think I do. I think the price is a factor for a lot of shoppers, and that a 6.5% difference in price does matter to many people, and they will make decisions, I think, based on if I can get something for a little less, one method or another. So I do believe it continues to be a fairness issue, that you can buy the same clock in two different places, and one of them has a price competitive advantage without, anything of their own, just because of an antiquated law. So, the idea shopping locally, I think, appeals to some people, but I do think many people are price sensitive, and this would, I think, level the playing field.
John, how about this idea of, Justice Kagan says it's about Congress. Jackley, immediately says, well, Congress isn't doing their job. Now fast forward that to the campaign. Regardless of how the Supreme Court rules on Wayfair, does Marty Jackley have an argument to use in a campaign against the, effectiveness of his, competitor in Congress?
It's a good question. I think that some of those things will be brought up, certainly, and it'll probably be started by Representative Noem saying the things that she did accomplish. And so an opponent, whether it's Marty or someone else, might say, yes, but there are a lot of things that didn't get done. But I don't know if they would talk about this particular case. It's possible. They may also point to legislation at South Dakota, of course, that each year Attorney General Jackley would introduce bills on behalf of his office, and those would either be passed or not passed. So they may very well talk about those as well, even though he doesn't have a chance to vote on those or carry the water, but things that he would introduce and lobby for. So I think both candidates will come up with things that will point to their ability to get legislation passed. Even they may even go back to when Representative Noem was in the state legislature and talking about some of the roles that she played there.
Seth, John said earlier that, it's a busy time for Marty, obviously a busy time for Congresswoman Noem as well. Do you think the busyness of what they're doing for their current, as they currently serve the state, does that help them, or is it just make it that much more difficult to, to keep a campaign going?
Well, I think it helps Jackley more than it does Noem, just from the fact that, Marty Jackley's, the office that he's currently elected to is in Pierre, and so he has a chance to travel around the state a lot more and a lot easier than Representative Noem, who has to be in Washington for certain things. So it definitely makes it easier for him. And as I said, I think he got a big benefit. I mean, he was in a lot of national media yesterday and today because of this Supreme Court issue, and here we are talking about it for an extended period of time. So I think it helps. It only helps him in the end, I think.
Let's switch over to the race for U.S. House. Some financial updates from Chantel Krebs and Dusty Johnson and Neil Tapio heading into the primary on June 5th. All, pretty strong financial showings. John, do you want to put some of those numbers into perspective? Does it matter how they're raising that money? Can you tell anything from what they're raising so far?
Yeah, that's it is an interesting question. It's even more interesting, I think, by the focus that's put on fundraising. I think there's a generation or two ago then when people would not talk about that kind of stuff, maybe even embarrassed by the money, raising portion of the campaign. Today, candidates are proud if they are able to raise substantial money, and sometimes they try to differentiate themselves. You see a lot of announcements that come to us as news people that will say, yes, we met this goal, or we raised this certain amount. Because we raised this certain amount, it proves that we're the better candidate and that more people support us. And then it gets a little nuanced where they say, well, we got ours from South Dakotans. Our average donation was something really small, so therefore we're supported by many more people. Others say, every quarter we've been more than the last quarter, or we did something that, Billy Sutton has said, we've raised more by this point in the campaign than other Democratic governor candidates. So, it really has become a public relations game. This week, I think, Lori, what you're referring to is when people are saying, do you take PAC money? Is that good, bad? I think some people would perceive that as kind of special interest sellout and may or may not be those, I think, in a lot of cases. But I think people who aren't raising from PACs will say that it's bad. And if they are raising, they'll say, no, it's good. And besides, we have many others. And it is an interesting process how this, especially at quarter's end when those things are reported, you'll see a lot of fundraising events in the week prior or events or calls for money. So it has become interesting. And the one, too, that kind of stuck out to me also was Neil Tapio had raised $105,000 or something. He said, well, $100,000 of that was a personal loan from himself to his campaign. So, it is. He convinced himself to be able to loan money to the campaign, so it isn't kind of really raising money, but it is. And if I understand the campaign laws, if you loan that money, it can be repaid if you don't get that. If there's money left over at the end of the campaign.
He said that there's a reason for doing that, and that's that he doesn't want to take money from PACs. So do you put much stock in the narrative that the candidates' campaign sort of spin, John, real quickly, and then we'll ask Seth for his input on that as well. But when they're saying, this indicates this, do you put stock in that and say, yeah, we think it does indicate that, or is it all just noise to you?
That's a very good question. I wish I were more thoughtful on it, but I think it is mostly noise. I think I'm hoping that voters would make the decisions on candidates other than press releases or news stories about fundraising. So that they would say, look, this person likes high taxes or low taxes or more money for education or whatever the issues of the day are, rather than the spin that would be part of any fundraising thing. I think it'd be best if the voting public would ignore all that stuff and just focus on things that are important to them.
Seth, your thoughts? Ignore the horse race and just look at the content of what the candidates want?
Yeah, well, I guess I'd first just point out, I'll be the guy who states the obvious, that anybody who says that they loan themselves $100,000 because they don't want to take somebody else's money, I don't know. Of course, we have to be skeptical of that. Maybe you just couldn't raise the money. My thoughts on it in general, I guess at first glance, I've just been surprised a little bit that, with Krebs and Johnson, Chantel Krebs and Dusty Johnson, neither has really been able to create, a lot of separation in fundraising. And in the absence of any, independent, credible polling that there hasn't been much of that I've seen, the fundraising is the only thing we really have to gauge the popularity of the candidates. And that would seem to indicate that it's a pretty even race at this point. And I would guess that they would have hoped to have created some separation by now, but it is at least some indication that maybe this is a pretty tight race.
Right. Absentee voting begins on Friday, so we'll see things spin up even further. And let's close with this, and this is Kevin Wooster will be with us tomorrow in his regular slot on In the Moment, but his blog is up now at sdpb.org/Wooster, and it's about the Lincoln Day dinner in Pennington County and a change in policy as far as letting reporters in the door. Seth, do you want to start there?
Yeah, I guess you know everybody needs to go read Kevin's column on this to get the full story. But it is rather indicative of where we've come to as a society and just sort of the all out war that's been declared, I guess, by some people in politics on the media. In that, this is something where traditionally a lot of times reporters have gone and covered, for example, speeches that candidates might give at a Lincoln Day dinner, which is the name they give to all the county party fundraisers in the Republican Party in South Dakota. And so for somebody, a reporter, to be refused access to that, I think it's an outgrowth of this sort of toxic relationship right now between the media and some people in politics. And it's unfortunate because and I think people in politics need to realize that, if you're afraid of just letting somebody in to cover what's going on, I don't know how that benefits you to be cast as somebody who's afraid of scrutiny or afraid of transparency.
John Hunter, your thoughts on that?
Well, Seth is right on that's the environment that we're in, is that, it really starts with the president, where he says if there's something that doesn't agree with him, then he calls it fake, right? So it's, well, no, that isn't fake. It's the truth. It may be exactly opposite of what you believe or want to be published or anything else, but it's not unreal. But I think a lot of people have embraced that. And, we've seen some press releases from South Dakota candidates that even decry fake news, and so we'll talk to them personally. It's, oh, I didn't mean South Dakota journalists. I was talking about CNN or Fox or someone like that. So, there's hundreds of journalists in South Dakota that are good and ethical and smart, and they're trying to cover their small communities as best they can. And so to be grouped in with those, and it seems patently unfair. But I'm speaking from a point of bias there, I guess, right? Because I'm a journalist myself. So, but I do think that those accusations tend to be from the large national things and not a journalist in Plankinton or Lemon or Rapid City or any other South Dakota city.
But the impact right here in South Dakota. So we'll talk with Kevin Wooster about that tomorrow. You can see the full story at sdpb.org/Wooster. John Hunter, publisher of the Madison Daily Leader, thanks so much for being here. It's always nice to talk to you.
Thanks, Lori. Me too.
Seth Tupper, Rapid City Journal Enterprise reporter, thanks as well.
Thanks for having me.